This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Enterprise. This is Frida Liu, and we've got the team from Digital News Asia joining us a little earlier than usual. We have Anusha Kandasamy, Shamila Ganapati, and Karamjit Singh. And we also have a guest here, and he's Vincent Kopp from VMO. So a lot of interesting stories in the last 2 weeks, and I guess you also be the key one. Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about this? This is this equity crowdfunding, and you managed to raise some money.
Hi, Frida. Thanks for having me back. No less on Star Wars Day.
All right.
Exactly a year since I was here.
Really?
Yep, exactly.
And you always come back with different hats, though.
Well, no, this time it's the same hat from last year. Yeah, but the first time I was here was a different hat. Yeah, that's right. Quite a while back, actually.
Quite a while back. So, yeah. But yeah, tell us this. So you got a VMO Rocks, so that's the company, but you guys are known as VMO. You raised a total of 500,000 ringgit through the equity crowdfunding platform crowdplus.asia over 4 days, and another 250,000 from co-investment deal with Cradle Fund. How come so much money? What is this deal?
Well, the total amount is actually $500,000, so 500,000. So 250 from Cradle Fund, and then which is matched then with the 250 from the crowd, right? So we did that on Crowd Plus, I think sometime in May, right? Sorry, May, March, losing track of time now. Just surprised us that it closed in 4 days.
Okay, so what's the money used for?
Well, a few things. The three main things that it's going to be used for is market expansion, obviously. Market expansion meaning that we will have more content, more listings coming online, and that will cover not just listings in Klang Valley, where we are predominantly based now, but it will go out to Johor, Malacca, Ipoh and Penang as well.
And maybe you can start off with a little bit about what VMO does.
Okay, right, good point. What VMO does is that we're instant booking platform for event venues and services. So what we do is to make it easy for anyone planning a birthday party, a corporate dinner, even a wedding, or even a convention to be able to find places online.
VMO has been around for how long?
It's been around for 2 years now. Two years plus.
You know, I've been doing this for the last couple of years. There have been a few companies that have attempted to do this. How do you think you're able to have sustained this?
I think that a lot of it is down to focus and determination. Not so simple.
I also have focus and determination.
I think that the times when we're not sure what we were doing was the correct thing, but we just plowed through. But also, benefit, we also had some very, very good partners who came in and who believed in us and supported us through that development.
Okay.
You have a Rhombus connection as a investor, an early investor, right?
Yes.
So that I think will give you a lot of inroads everywhere in Southeast Asia because they're pretty big.
They are growing at a very fast rate. Mm-hmm. How Rhombus came in is interesting by itself because they came in first as a customer. So we were bringing them events on a very regular basis. The first event was 4,000 ringgit and then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger to something like 25,000 ringgit. And then they decided that since they were giving us so much money, they decided that, hey, let's take a stake in this guys as well. Mm. Right? And that's how they became an investor in us last September.
Okay. And what do you think makes it so attractive? You know, is it because it's very easy to make that booking?
I think part of it comes from our idea right from the start was to make the whole booking process something that could be done in less than 5 minutes. Prior to this, when I used to organize workshops and events, we had to take about 2 weeks, and the process involved faxes, right? Which
faxes? You all know what they are?
I do know.
Which was a real pain.
Fax.
Yeah, and the fax was wonderful for its time, just not so much in 2012 or even 2014 and 2017. So it's not relevant anymore. We felt that if we could bring that entire process, the same process of booking an airline ticket do it for event bookings, perfect. And that's what we set out to do. So we always had that vision to do that.
Okay. Yeah, Karam.
I think one significant thing that kind of escaped as you were talking is that you raised the $500,000 in 4 days.
Yes.
This is on crowdfunding, right?
250 through crowdfunding,
okay, 250,
yes.
250, yeah. But even then in 4 days only. So you were only targeting $500,000, was it?
That's right. We just want a $500,000.
Oh, okay. So you have actually a lot more expression of interest, correct? And you're just keeping that for the next round then?
That's right. We're keeping that for the next round.
That's a nice position to be in. I think earlier we were also talking that Frida is saying a lot of people have tried this already. Yeah? And you said that being first is never a good thing, which is kind of interesting because in the internet world, startup space, people think you have that first mover advantage. Why is it in this particular space being first? Of course, with the benefit of hindsight, you are not first and a lot of the first movers have died out, right? So why was it so difficult in the early years?
I think the being first mover means that you have to do a lot more education. Even though we were not first, there was still education to do, but not as much as, let's say, the first two movers, right? Which I think would have been extremely painful. And for us, when we were starting out, we had very limited budget, so we couldn't afford to be the first to go out there and educate the market.
Okay, and the reason why you've gone through the equity crowdfunding platform, is it also part of marketing strategy just to get your name out there?
Two things, actually. One was chance, purely by chance, that we bumped into Brian Chung, at that point the COO of CrowdPlus, and he told us, already he told me, what the scene was like where CrowdPlus... what ECF was doing, how ECF is growing. And having seen quite a number of campaigns coming online and seeing the success, it gave me comfort that that could be one way. But also, the second thing is that we're very much a consumer product. Vimo is very much consumer-based. So if we have shareholders who then become our users, they will actively go out there and promote the service as well. So that's the good thing about equity crowdfunding.
Okay.
Are inquiries increasing now? I'm curious to know whether the consumers out there, the public, are going to your platform as among the first things they do.
Well, we've definitely seen an increase in the number of inquiries that we're getting. We got 7 inquiries on the first month when we started. We get 7 inquiries at least within an hour nowadays.
Wow, 7 in the first month and now 7.
I'm so happy Karim doesn't have a chair. Go on.
And he's so tall, he has to bend down so low to the mic.
Oh my goodness me, man. Isn't this violating radio ethics? You let people visualize how uncomfortable I am here. Yeah. Terrible. Next time we'll
go on the little joys I get out of this job.
Okay, that's very interesting. So I think the fact that crowdfunding is picking up as a platform, Baby Dash, right? Raised so much money.
Baby Dash,
over 1 million. And I'm
1.4, I think.
More. And so I'm wondering, when will the next person come and break their record, right?
Because that's right.
Records are made to be broken, and this is a fantastic record to keep breaking.
But I don't think it should be a record. You know what I mean? I don't think it should be something that, I mean, it's just like, okay, I need this money to do this, but it shouldn't be like, it shouldn't be a competition, but I raised a million or 2 million.
Good point.
Then defeats the purpose of the business.
I think, the business it benefits.
I understand the PR side because,
exactly.
Wow,
and
it's
I
great.
Think that wow factor is important because it's part of the education process. More and more people are going to say, hey, what's this record I keep hearing are being broken? Oh, crowdfunding. Like, even you're in the ecosystem and your chance encounter with Brian enlighten him about equity crowdfunding, whereas you're already a player, you should have known about it. So imagine how far we have to go in terms of educating the ecosystem, right?
Yep.
And a lot of your listeners are people who can probably afford to have a bit of disposable income, invested in guys like him, right? And they need to be aware that equity crowdfunding is a viable option out there.
Okay.
Of course, if you lose your pants, don't come looking for me.
He
became a pitchman for ECF.
No, but it's part of the ecosystem, right? It is part of
Andrew Tan of CrowdPlus is going to come and looking for you.
It's very good because now Karim is on his knees.
Goodness.
I've got a picture to prove it.
Good. And please share it. So yeah, very exciting times for you guys. And so future plans. Right now, I guess just, what will you be up to?
Well, the other parts of the money, apart from tech development, is also increased advertising, right? Increased promotion. So we had a minuscule budget to begin with last year, right? So this crowdfunding campaign has given us the extra budget to really ramp up our presence this year, right? So one of the areas that we want to go into is to start targeting Singaporeans to come over to Malaysia to do their events, right? The strength of the Singapore dollar is going to be fantastic. 3-1, right? So
correct. So you're looking at, so obviously then it'll be Iskandar, right? Which is easy for them.
It will be Iskandar. It will be the Johor region in Malacca. Okay. Even
are you getting bookings from all over? Mm. I mean, is it just largely Malaysia?
It's largely Malaysia, but I'm also happy to report that we've already had international bookings. Our first international booking came from Hong Kong into Malaysia. For a corporate event.
So the but the event venues are largely Malaysian.
Largely Malaysian, yeah, okay. At the moment.
And Klang Valley?
Klang Valley is the predominant area.
You got to look at Kuching, huh?
Okay, that's good.
Now I finally get my chair, like,
and it's great, right? Because we need to, and that's part of, you know, tourism dollars, business tourism, business conferences, and all that. So this is the great thing, lah. So right now, at the moment, though, are there other players in Malaysia?
I think there are several other players. Like I said, I wasn't the first. In fact, we were inspired by another player who had started before us that woke us up to say that we got to get this going. We actually registered the company in 2012, didn't do anything for 2 years until the other player came in and said, hey, okay, let's wake up.
Okay. All right. We'll come back with more stories after this. We've got a story around DHL and MDEC. Stay tuned to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Bureaucratic failures multiply. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning, Frida Liu here. Anusha Kandasamy, Shamila Ganapati, and Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia joins us a little earlier. And we're talking about the tech space. Earlier, we had a conversation with Vincent Kopp from Vimo, talking about their instant booking platform, which raised $500,000 through the equity crowdfunding platform, crowdplus.asia. Okay, next story is DHL e-commerce. They launches in Malaysia's booming industry. Mm-hmm. Booming industry?
Booming e-commerce industry. E-commerce. That's what I
meant. Came out with that as a press release.
Okay. No, actually, no, it's not. She was there. So let me do a quick aside first because... it's interesting related to this story because last night, I think my wife suddenly just said out aloud that there's 7 million e-commerce shoppers a year in Malaysia. Then I heard that. I said, what rubbish, no such thing. And he said, it's your own story. I said, what? I went to the DNA story. I said, wait, who wrote this? I wouldn't have let this through.
Yeah.
And then it was this DHL story. So I said, okay, like, if DHL is getting some data from there, okay, like, chill down. But I got a bit hard time from my wife. Like, how come you don't know everything that goes on your portal?
It was, I think in the article it says 5% of all things purchased in Malaysia are bought online.
Already, yeah? Interesting, yeah. We were talking about 1%, 2%.
So e-commerce is booming, yes. Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah, so basically DHL e-commerce launched on April 27th, last week.
Last week.
Yeah, and they were, I think Michael Brewer was here talking about it. So they're basically domestic delivery operations. They're providing customer-centric services catered to Malaysia's growing e-commerce market. That's what
domestic,
they do.
Interesting.
Okay. Domestic, so... Well, they also have cross-border shipping solutions.
Yeah, of course, and, DHL. You know, but that's competition to post-Malaysia now, man. Interesting.
Mm. Basically, what he said was the reason that they are here, the reason for their existence, is to provide excellent last-mile delivery services. Mm. So what the customer demands, you know, basically customers are like hugely demanding nowadays. Yeah. They want it when I want it, where I want
it. Forget about customers, I'm demanding, right? Yeah. I paid, I want it now.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. So that's what they're here for.
You know, many years ago, I read this book. I think it came out in 1999. It was by Paul Zane Pilzer. It talks about the next trillion, right?
Oh, okay.
And two things, right? Wellness industry, that's booming, you know? So this was like 1720, you know, last century book, right?
Oh,
and the other thing is the distribution. Money is in distribution.
Mm.
Yeah, money is in distribution and logistics, right?
Supply chain,
you know?
Like,
the supply chain.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, according to DHL, digital e-commerce, it's in basically last mile delivery.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Because of customer demands and expectations. And at the launch, Jason Kong, the managing director of DHL e-commerce Malaysia, said something quite interesting. He said that if there is a failure in delivery, the customer often attributes that to the merchant, to the retailer, and not to the logistics partner.
Of course.
So, I mean, if you order something online, you don't get your package, you're going to blame the person you bought it from, not DHL, right? Because you really, whoever's delivering it, because you actually don't even know who's delivering it sometimes.
Mm.
So, that's why a logistic partner that can be trusted, who can successfully bridge the customer experience, is so important for retailers.
And the other thing was we're having our retail event, I have to say, on May 15th,
yeah,
right?
Rocks.
Rocks, Enterprise Rocks. If you haven't registered, go to bfm.my/rocks. But so we were having this conversation with mynews.com, right? And he'll be one of the panelist speakers. And that's where the last mile opportunity is, the 7-Elevens and the mynews.com, where you can get your products delivered there.
Yes.
You see, because okay. you're on your way back, and that they're really selling convenience at the end of the day.
Yes. Sure. It's right? the same thing that Tan Sri Vincent Tan mentioned, right, during our conference last year. Mm-hmm. Not selling, but just at that yeah. conference. And he was saying that they're going to use their 7-Eleven stores as a pickup point for people to come, right? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when you buy stuff, you don't want, there are people, he says, who don't want to give their home address. Mm-hmm. And so they rather probably trust yeah. the 7-Eleven in your neighborhood, right? It's on your way home. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably see soon
because
a drop-off point.
To pick up your exactly. milk, your Maybe. Eggs, your bread, and your package.
Especially past 10 p.m., right? Yeah, mm-hmm. So these are a trusted, safe locations. So kind of interesting that it's an obvious low-hanging fruit and yeah. opportunity. Yeah, mm-hmm. So good and great that MyNew sees that opportunity. So, although I see them in malls a lot of times, do they have like standalone outlets?
They do plenty.
Is it? Okay.
Where have you been?
I tend to only notice. I don't buy print. I don't know. I say, hey, there's a store selling print.
You know, when you're going for you're going for your, what's this, your 100 plus, mm-hmm. You just go buy, right, into one of these outlets.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, because that's what's happening in Japan and Korea. So that's, yes. you know, ages ago,
Absolutely.
Right? Mm-hmm. We're over 30,000 outlets. That's yeah. the last mile there. That's
Phenomenal.
The opportunity there.
Correct.
Right.
Sorry, just yeah. now I said his name was Michael Brew. It's actually Charles Brew. I'm so sorry.
Okay, and that's the
CEO of DHL E-commerce.
Global. Okay, yeah. So he was in town,
Charles
right?
Brewer. Hey, I think he was running Malaysia before. His name sounds familiar, Frida? Charles Brewer?
No.
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
Yes.
Vincent Koch is still here nodding his head.
No, he says he remembers Charles Brewer.
He remembers Brewer, Charles yeah. Brewer. All right. Shamila, you've got a story about China and India.
Yeah, that's right. I had a chance to interview an investment research firm. Mm-hmm. What they do is they study VC trends, VC investment trends. And they found that China and India are actually the two biggest countries for venture capital investment activity. Mm-hmm. They still remain the two biggest countries in Asia.
Okay. Oh, in Asia. Okay.
So, and there are no surprises there. I like how you said Southeast Asia, meanwhile, still remains a mystery.
Yeah, that's what he said. He didn't elaborate too much on that, but he did say that it's more of a question of this country's government's role mm-hmm. in actually encouraging entrepreneurs and actually implementing plans to encourage foreign investment into the countries.
Hmm. I'm surprised it's a mystery.
This guy doesn't know Bali is in Southeast Asia. He's probably been there a gazillion times. What do you mean? I'm in Southeast Asia. How nice.
Yeah, but he was, interestingly, he was using data that the firm had collected based on US and Europe and other global venture capitalists.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's based on data that they had collected.
I think maybe it's easy for them to collect data for India, China, because these are standalone countries with a billion people, yeah. so you get that kind of information. Yeah. And whereas if you talk about Southeast Asia, there are different incentives and initiatives in these different
yeah,
countries.
Correct.
So you've got to sort of look at each country differently. It's not one broad sweep.
Yeah, you've got to work harder to get the details. But, I mean, so many of these VC firms are already in Singapore anyway. That's the hub.
Yes, they did have.
Maybe he doesn't know that Singapore is in Southeast Asia,
no,
so that's his problem.
They do have data on Singapore.
Uh-huh. No, but he thinks
Japan,
it's a separate country.
Hong Kong.
Yeah. Correct. See, Singapore, yes. Japan, Hong Kong, these three places must be clustered around the same area. Because he knows Singapore is a dot, okay, maybe off Taiwan, off Japan. What nonsense. They're all here.
They actually have done some studies on Southeast Asia.
Okay.
And they found
shouldn't
that
be so mysterious then.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have. They actually found that internet companies and telecommunications are the two industries attracting the most interest.
Telcos,
so they have some data. So if you read the article online, you'll actually see a graph with the data and the most popular industries in Southeast Asia.
Okay. And this was where? At the conference you met him?
Yes. The guy from Prequin Limited,
yeah.
he was actually at the Global Ventures Summit in Bali.
It's the first time organized, right?
Yes, yeah. First time.
Correct. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So Bali, yeah? Bali
yeah.
is in Southeast Asia.
He may not know.
Okay. And then the Malaysia's data center challenges.
That was an interesting story.
Yes. That was actually a two-part story. And the first part covered the Malaysia's plans to be a regional data center hub. And the second part was more on how the local industry has developed. So it was actually quite interesting. What I liked about the interview was actually there were a lot of positives about what is being done.
to make Malaysia a regional data center. But at the same time, I found that MDEC was also quite realistic, quite candid about what can and cannot be achieved.
So what can and cannot be achieved?
Well, the first one was, I think, back in 2012 when they had the slabs, right, in 2011. Then one of the key highlights was they say we're going to be a regional data center hub, Malaysia, and you want to have 5 million square feet of you know, data center space. And even back then, a lot of players were saying, this is just a stretch. This is really a stretch goal. And then, but, you know, it's been said, and it's not MDEC that said it, but MDEC was entrusted to run it. And then you start running with it, and then you come up with the fact that everybody's already comfortable with Singapore being a regional center, and they offer tremendous incentives to defray their you know, high cost of talent and the high cost of electricity. Because, you know, they see this as a critical space that they want to be a player in, so loads of incentives they're offered. And then, but MDEC still went ahead. And then suddenly, the technology changes, right? And this I didn't even realize till Shamila's story came out. Because of cloud now, and how you see the cloud service providers, you've got the giant three players in the planet now. And I bet even if another planet was adopting cloud, they'd probably use services from one of these three big players because they're everywhere. We're talking about Google, Microsoft, and Facebook. Yeah, I know. Sorry?
Amazon,
Google, Microsoft. So I was thinking of Facebook. I don't know why. But these are the three, and they've got data centers everywhere. I mean, even in Iceland or something, right? Because you want the cooling is a big cost factor, so you keep it in a place where nature provides you with cooling. Although with global warming now, you know, you don't know what's happening there. But anyway, the point is that with cloud being so big, and you've got these three, and they're known as public cloud players, you know, the need for physical data centers in operated by various smaller operators and countries is becoming much smaller. The opportunity is much smaller. And MDEC has realized that. And the good thing is they say we're not chasing that 5 million square feet goal anymore. Right? And I think it's...
And I think that's good as well. You know, like, absolutely. So we change our goals, and then rather than trying to stick to something...
This came, you know, from Pemandu Lab with the endorsement of the Prime Minister's office. No, we got to follow. No,
if it's,
you know,
not relevant now,
exactly.
Change it.
Exactly.
Pivot.
Pivot. So they are doing the pivot, and I like the fact that although they acknowledge that Singapore has got such a strong base and hub, they say Malaysia still wants a piece of the data center market, and we're going to, you know, create that niche for ourselves. And then that digital economy conference in Sarawak, Kumaran Singham, right? It was ex-Cisco. They're doing a cloud data center play, and he said that actually Malaysia can compete, and especially Sarawak because of its
land.
Low cost of power, yeah. Right? Fantastic. So that was an eye opener for me. So
space,
yeah. So exactly with ample space too. And he says that, and the talent pool too. You need the talent.
You need the talent pool to come back.
Yeah, and you have these kind of centers. You have much less jobs available. They're high worth jobs, right? High net worth jobs, and you don't need like 200 people running a data center. So this suits the talent pool that we have in Malaysia too. So it's great to hear that validation. Right, from this is a global cloud company. I forgot the name. Is it Cloud Connect? I think I got his name wrong. But, Kumaran Singham, is ex-Cisco manager in Malaysia. Now he's running the Asian operations. So it validates that there is an opportunity. And, you know, MDEC's pushing ahead and making sure that not everybody de facto, let's just go to Singapore. So kudos to them. That was a story I liked too.
Any additional story around this? Any additional information around the story?
Well, I think what I would like to say is that MDEC is being smart enough to actually offer solutions because, of course, they are, in a sense, they're pivoting. They've changed some of the goals to actually bring the country forward in the data center dream and that. So they're smart enough to actually adapt and actually offer solutions to all these challenges. So I just like to say that.
Silence. we'll return with more stories after the Bursa update. Stay tuned to Enterprise. You're listening to the team from Digital News Asia, BFM 89.9.
Breaking Financial Matters, BFM 89.9.
And yes, you're still listening to Enterprise. It's Tech Thursday. The folks from Digital News Asia with me, we've got Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam. I've been calling her Kandasami. Shamila Ganapati. And Vincent Kok, from BMO, is sitting behind us as well. Just nodding in approval whenever it was right. Okay. So, Karam, you know, you've been quiet.
I'm enjoying the sensation of the unbearable lightness of being that you've bestowed on me. Okay, although my knee hurts now, my kneecap slightly.
Okay, you got a story about Axiata.
Yeah, yeah. No, no. We it's actually a press release. I don't know if there was an invitation for us to cover it. Shamila, did you come across it in newsroom?
No.
Oh, no? Okay, so I think this just they did it without having a media presence there. I stand to be corrected. But what happened is that it's significant. Because you were talking about this VC, you know, saying that they don't know enough about government, you know, supporting, you know, the digital ecosystem. And this is exactly about that. This is the Axiata Digital Innovation Fund. And they launched this like 2 years ago with 70 million ringgit. Yeah. So 20 million came from MEFCAP, which is your, you know, for your money, right? All of you who are listening, those of you who pay taxes, taxpayer money. And because MEFCAP is the government venture capital arm, just like Temasek is for the Singapore government, put 20 million. Axiata put in 50 million. And the fund has the goal of hitting 100 million, yeah, fund size. And what this fund is doing is directed to help build up capabilities of local digital companies, yeah, especially Bumiputras to be successful regional and international players. So there is the dreaded quota word, yeah, but it's there. And it's not that your normal 70-30, but there is a decision to help, you know, more Bumi, because this space is very only multiracial anyway. But they say, let's get more Bumi participation in. So that's the money coming in from Adifla, which is from Axiata. But now Johor Corp has come in, right? That's the new thing. And they're putting in 10 million. And what's interesting is that this is a corporate company, yeah, putting in money into a venture fund. And the ecosystem players, and you talk to Nazrin and all, they always say, from Cradle, always say that one key element of the ecosystem maturing is when the corporate sector says that, hey, there could be opportunity here, let's invest. And some point down the road, even Vincent could benefit, right? Maybe Adif says, hey, we like this event space, it's scalable. Vincent seems to have made his mistakes in the early phases, right? Maybe let's look at how his business is growing, or people like him. Or maybe his competitor is doing better than him. Let's look at his competitor. So they're 10 million in. And I think they will hit their 100 million, you know, fund at some point. And a lot of the companies that they're aiding are already revenue generating, right? So, which is kind of interesting. So you see the ecosystem developing. You see him, Vincent, raising money through crowdfunding. That's now, you know, nicely bubbling along. Johor Corp coming in, and then maybe family fund will come in and put in another remaining 20 million. So that's for entrepreneurs out there, it's kind of exciting to see these things moving, and they're all moving in the right. And we've always said that from day one, right, 2012 in the show, that all the macro trends are moving in the right direction. But, you know, with Malaysia being impatient, we want them to move faster. And I cannot say whether it's moving faster, but it's moving along. It's not moving slowly, it's moving at a good pace. But of course, all of us want it to move faster, right? And I guess if guys like Vincent fly high and with money they use, they succeed. And then the people invested in them will talk about it during their karaoke sessions, mahjong sessions, teh tarik sessions and all that. You know, going for Boria practice and all that. Hey, you know, this word slowly percolates and filters down, right? Boria, you don't have Boria anymore. I was going to say Bosia, I don't know why, but... A blast from the past. We had some cultural element to the show.
That we've invested some companies are revenue generating. Do we know who they are?
There are a lot. I mean, we have written about some of them also. Like, do you remember any of them? I remember Easy Uni is one. They've invested in them. Shamila, you've covered one or two that have Adi funding. Okay.
For Axiata, is it?
Yeah, for the Axiata fund, the MFCAP fund that's called Adif, the Axiata Digital Innovation Fund.
I haven't.
Okay, so
I think I have, but I just
the name skips your mind. Yeah, that's right.
So Easy Uni is one.
Yeah,
okay.
Easy Uni is one big one, and they've done a few good things. So it's all good and happening, you know. One is a travel one, I think. One of the travel sites too.
TripFest?
I'm not sure. I don't want to say the wrong name.
And that's positive, right? And then it's
clearly positive. Yeah.
And you don't have to see how it's connected to your to your own business, but somehow things will evolve, things will change, and if it's revenue generating, you're making money.
Yeah. And then even if they're not, sometimes the funding you give them helps them get that traction. And remember, Axiata right now has a base of 320 million customers, right? Almost all in Asia, right, through the investment in the Nepal telco and Robi in Bangladesh. And that's an asset for you if you're a startup. So that's a very attractive proposition. So looking very good.
Okay.
So just wanted to point that ecosystem connection dots, right, that are happening, and people may not realize when you listen to stories on an individual piecemeal basis.
Right. There is an e-games festival called Hot Shots.
Yeah, so this is another part of the ecosystem. And so we announced this, I think, in February, right? And then publicly last month. So this is just an e-games festival. It's very important. People kind of think of e-sports, but this is an e-games festival because we've got various components. You don't just have the e-sports, the competitive element, where you're playing a game and hoping you win. You've also got game publishers showcase. We've got Sony and Codemasters coming in to showcase some of their games. This is during the main event in July. And then you've got PC modding, which is where you modify your PCs. We're all familiar with people who modify, love their cars, right? You've got people who spend money investing in their PCs and modifying the CPU to be a power pack machine. You've got independent game publishers, and MDAC has come in to promote this area, and they want to position Malaysia as a regional, you know, independent game publishers hub. They're doing that. And then we've got cosplay competition. And I think Anusha is excited about that. She's going to...
Karim just says he's going to dress up as Gandalf.
Okay, there's not much dressing that needs to be done.
That's true too. But the beard.
Exactly,
the
beard. Yeah, I just need a nice... I just got to go up Gussing Hill and get a nice stick that looks like a staff. Yeah,
staff.
Correct. And then also there's... and then you've got the... Okay, these are all the components. And cosplay, is the last one. So it's a holistic thing, right? Not just the esports component, but... We're kickstarting everything with the esports component because we are doing a 6-university circuit as a qualifying round to get the best amateur. So we received some flack from some community sites because we're only focusing on amateur players. And the decision was simple. There's a lot of events going on for pros. And we've got a very good talent pool of serious, you know, gamers in the country, successful gamers.
Yeah. And so give some publicity to the amateurs.
Yeah,
right?
Amateurs. So we're trying to position Hotshots as the platform for new, for tomorrow's professionals to emerge, right? So it is a platform. So you've got a 6-university circuit where you have a qualifying round, and then the winners of each of the 6 game titles will then, the top 3 will go to the finals at Hotshots. And Hotshots is where all various other things come together. So the thing is, we just kicked off the qualifiers at University of Malaya on Saturday. Went very well. Almost 200 gamers and some of their supporters came. And they all had a good time because you have 1 gig bandwidth, right? So when you use a university facility on the weekend, the bandwidth is yours to be used. So the gamers had a great time. And I'm not supposed to mention sponsors, but one of the leading, you know, PC brands came in and they were the official gaming hardware, and that helped. And players were
the
really thrilled.
Was amazing.
They were really thrilled to see this new hardware coming out.
Super,
you know?
Brand new.
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, it makes for the gaming experience, right? But one kind of interesting thing that I learned, and we streamed it also, and we had in the stream, and we only streamed 4 games, there were a total of just under 40,000 views for the 4 games that we streamed. It's like, wow, you mean people are actually watching this at home, you know, or live, and then they're commentators also. So a lot of this is new to me, but I'm just amazed to see the interest and the traction there. And one of the guys said something interesting. He said that gaming is actually a silent religion because a lot of people play gaming and they don't just make it known. Yeah, silent religion. So yeah, religiously, I don't know lah. The hardcore ones play religiously. So it was interesting to know. And then the winners of the first qualifying rounds are there, and they're all excited going to the, you know, main event at KDU in July 22nd, 23rd. But you can go to the hotshots.asia website or to the Hotshots Facebook page and check out a bit more information. And this Saturday, we're at International Islamic University of Malaya. They're hosting the next qualifier. And I was at the campus yesterday, expensive, beautiful. And you see all these students, you know, walking about, and you know, they're trying to build a better future for themselves. And this is the talent pool of Malaysia, right? It's kind of exciting sometimes to be in a university. And our event is going to be held at the ICT faculty, so the broadband is amazing there. And it's just nice to see kids who are aspiring to build a better future for themselves, right? And we have a role to play too. So it's all kind of like in the ecosystem coming together. So it was just fun to have these hot shots going on. And then we've got the next one coming. And after that, we've got APU on May 13th. Kind of scary to organize something at this scale, but we've decided, like Vincent was saying, right? We maybe didn't know what we're doing, but we just decided to plow ahead. And I exactly feel like that sometimes with how the scale of this is coming along.
What is it? Get ready, aim, shoot. So it's like shoot.
Yeah, yeah, the other way around. Right? Yeah, it's not coming to me now. What is it? It's
just shoot, aim, and then...
Shoot, aim, and then say you hit the target, right? Because the target you define after you shoot. Yeah, we hit the target.
Right.
But so that's hot shots.
Anything on Digirati?
Oh, Digirati is interesting because, we always write about it every week. Last week, we wrote about ecosystem player Warren Tan, right? And he said that his dad played an important role in instilling the spirit of entrepreneurship and do-it-yourself in him, especially when he's a teenager. So, again, he said the dad bought him a computer and refused used to upgrade it for him, so he had to upgrade it himself. And a lot of gamers, my two boys play,
child
right?
Child abuse.
No. It's you know, when it's scarce. So they say what necessity is the mother of invention, right? Mm. So it's related to scarcity. It forces you to be creative. And even my kids now are saying they want to like build their own PC, you know, CPU. And I'm excited, you know. Hopefully go out and buy the parts and then they build their own. So it's a learning, exploring thing for them. And maybe the next Steve Jobs of the world will come out from Malaysia. Some kid, you know, frustrated that he doesn't get the budget to buy all the best stuff and goes scavenging and looks for stuff and puts together a PC that he wants to take for a gaming event. Maybe even at Hotshot. So it's kind of exciting to see. Like, but Warren was just talking about how his dad helped inculcate in him that you got to try to make do with the best of what you have. And don't settle for what you have, right? Be creative and find ways around it. And that's the essence of entrepreneurship. And on Saturday, we're going to be highlighting Wei Chuan Beng from Red Tone, right? So talking about what he is doing and his third big bet. And his third big bet is on IoT Internet of Things. So read that on Saturday.
On Saturday.
It'll go up at noon.
Teases a little bit, yeah?
Wei's a cool guy.
Okay, so we have Anusha Kadasivam, Chamila Ganapati, and Karimjit Singh from Digital News Asia. You've been listening to Enterprise on Tech Thursdays, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.